Welcome, everybody, to Talking Tigers. This is your host, Wesley Burris, and my co-host, Taylor Griggs. This is a Win or Die Sports production. This is, I don't even know what number edition this is, but this is going to be our recap of the A&M game. Big win for the Tigers on the road, and going to preview what should be a big win, not a nationally relevant big win, but a big win in Death Valley nonetheless, because I think they're going to roll this week. Weekend against Georgia Southern. Now, getting into the recap of the A&M game. What an interesting game this was. I was very, very disturbed by my boys just really laying an egg on Saturday and getting punched in the face and quitting in the third quarter and just looking like a very overmatched football team. That ought to make you guys feel really happy. I'm glad that I could share that with you. But anyway, the Tigers ended up looking pretty darn good early. Looked to me like they kind of lost their way a little bit in the second half, especially the fourth quarter, where, my God, did Kellen Mond just go ridiculous out there and make play. He looked like he was in the damn Matrix, Taylor. I mean, he was spinning around, making throws that you're not supposed to make, defying logic, really, like we were talking about earlier, you said about Aaron Rodgers. He really was defying logic against the Tigers' defense the other day because – he negated the pass rush late in the game, even though it was still there. I mean, it never stopped being there. But he just really, man, there wasn't anything the Tigers could do to answer. The middle of the field was wide open. I think that some Tiger fans are going to have questions, as I would, about Venables continuing to stick with the same kind of defensive scheme throughout. When you see what was beating you, you really didn't take that away from him. This was a game where I felt like A&M looked okay in the run game and balance on the first couple drives where they could have gone up 6-0. Some people could say 10-0. They missed a field goal there. They were up 3-0 against the Tigers, and the Tigers answered back and went up 7-3. We'll get into that in a second with the box score. But just from watching this game, there were parts of it where I did kind of flip the channel and miss a couple things. For the most part, I saw the entire game. I missed one A&M score. Every other score in the entire game I saw. That ends up being pretty irrelevant because at the time it was 20. We made it 21-13, and then I turned it back, and the Tigers were already down there about to score again and did score to go up 28-13. One thing I want to say about this game, and I want to say it early in the podcast here, is I know that Clemson fans have to be frustrated sometimes. It seems as if when you get a two-score lead or three-score lead in these games, it seems that Dabo and company kind of dial it back and go back into a – kind of a don't lose the game type of mentality. And I know that's got to frustrate you guys as fans. It would frustrate me because I feel like Clemson is talented enough, and I thought they were talented enough to win this game by more than two touchdowns. I said as much on the podcast last week. Taylor said the same thing. He thought this would be a 17-point game. Many things in this game after the first quarter was over, the Tigers got into a groove. And by the end of the third quarter, I really thought this was going to be a game that ended up being like 35-13 or 35-20, something like that. I really saw that happening, and it didn't happen. And the reason that it didn't happen is, for whatever reason, I think Clemson did kind of dial it back and get a little vanilla. A&M was pumped up as well when they started moving the ball and seeing some success there in the second half in the passing game. Again, Kellen Mond played completely out of his mind. I didn't think the kid was super talented going in. He actually lost his starting job last season. Starkle took over and actually had a more productive year. I was interested to see what this kid could do against the Tigers. He threw for a ton of yards. We'll get into that in a minute. He made some truly amazing plays. And there was some questionable calls and whatnot in this game. But, you know, the fumble that some people think went out of bounds that was called ruled a touchback, there was no indisputable evidence there. That's just the bottom line. There's no camera that could catch it doing any way. You know, I had a discussion with a guy earlier today, a Clemson fan, and I said, look, I understand why the play was called the way it was, because the back judge or whoever, the line judge that made the call, whichever one of them made the call, they made the call, and the review has got – the replay has got to show indisputable evidence. We all know this. Now, that being said, I think the Tigers were going to win the game anyway. I do think that, you know, A&M was still going to have to get a two-point conversion there to tie the game. So they didn't score. Clemson gets the ball. Clemson does nothing, gives the ball right back to A&M, and then A&M goes down, scores really quickly, and doesn't get the two-point conversion. Therefore, they don't win the football game. So I don't think it definitely got a little closer than the Tiger fans wanted, and I think it seemed that the money nationwide was mostly on Clemson. The line crept up a little bit throughout the week, kind of came back down a little bit Saturday. I think the final line ended up being somewhere around 12.5. So the Tigers didn't get the cover but got a huge win on the road, because winning on the road at Cal Field, that's tough. I don't care who you are. And in Clemson, you know, I had a buddy of mine was talking about how the ACC looked, and I told him, I said, don't worry about how the ACC looks. That doesn't matter. If Clemson continues to win their football games, they're going to be there in the mix at the end of the year in the playoff. Wouldn't you think so?
Yeah.
I mean, we both said earlier this year, and I don't think anything's changed our mind yet, that I think that Clemson's more talented than everybody they play against. They've gotten past what obviously is probably going to be their toughest test, or one of their toughest tests of the entire year. They've already passed that test. There's still some question marks as to what the Tigers are going to do with the quarterback position. It kind of baffles me a little bit that they ended up going to the style of offense they did late in the game. It seemed like more of a conservative style, and maybe other people will disagree with me on that, but that's just kind of my take on it, is I feel like you really didn't – it's not that you weren't trying to win. I'm not trying to say that. I'm not trying to be negative. I just feel like there was definitely a chance there to be aggressive when you're up 28-13 and whatnot, to really just step on them and get out of the football game. Get down there, get you a field goal, do something, and open it up and get a big win. And otherwise, you let them stay in the game, and then that cat caught fire, and that number 13, well, I can't remember his name. You'll have it on there when we go over the stats in just a second. Man, he just seemed uncoverable over the middle. And, you know, I know that Venable's defense is aggressive. I did see that both teams looked a little gassed on defense late in the game. A&M seemed to have a little bit more pep in their step. Obviously, I would think the 12th man did play a role in this ball game. They were loud the entire time. There's no doubt about it. The weather was weird. It was wet. It was, you know, I didn't think the passing game would be as big as it was. What did you take away from this game from what you saw?
Two good football teams.
Yeah. I think A&M – I'm sorry, but I do – I think A&M is definitely – when you can play Clemson that well,
yeah,
they're on the radar now, man.
Something I don't know, and I don't know how Clemson fans feel about this, because I haven't really talked to any. I don't like this playing quarterbacks back and, like, putting Kelly Bryant in and then
– Well, you had to – no, you had to let Lawrence play, I think. It wasn't like they switched him throughout the entire game.
Yeah, but they switched him, and then switched him, but put him back in.
Well, the majority of the second half was Kelly Bryant's ball game.
Yeah, but why not Kelly Bryant play the whole game?
Because I think you have a kid that has that much talent, you have to put him on the football field. You have to. You cannot hold.
I don't agree with it.
Well, you cannot agree with it all you want. Trevor Lawrence has a huge arm. He's accurate. I've seen it. He's a big kid. He can run from everything that I've heard, and I have seen him, you know, I haven't really seen him break free yet. They say when he gets in the open field, he's scary fast. He's got long strides, and he can go. I mean, this is what I hear, and that's fine. I think you do have to play both of them, and I know that I know of a couple people that are going to agree with what you're saying. You go with one and stick with them. I get that.
Especially since he's played better than him.
I don't really see how you can say that.
This game?
Well, what were Lawrence's stats real quick? Just throw them out there, since you're gonna argue with me.
5 for 9, 93 yards and a touchdown.
What's wrong with that? I mean, a lot of that's on one big play. I understand. Trevor Lawrence didn't do anything to not earn playing time in this game. What I completely – and I have not listened to what Dabo had to say. I haven't. And I'm wrong for doing that and throwing the show out there. And Taylor and I almost – because of what's going on this weekend, we almost didn't do either of the shows that we normally do, because we didn't really know what was going on. I'm sulking a little bit from my boys just getting spanked down in Columbia. But I will say this, that I think Lawrence threw that pass to T. Higgins, and we'll go ahead and throw this out there right
jump
now.
Ball.
It was a jump ball, but it was well thrown. He threw it where he could get it. Now, initially, I thought that the announcers just jumping on and praising Trevor Lawrence for that pass and not giving Higgins the credit, that made me mad, because I saw two defenders there. The defender, the safety coming down to help on the play, he was further away than I initially thought in real time. He was actually further away from the other camera angle. So I understand that wasn't a throw, just throw up ball. It wasn't, but it was a 50-50 ball that he threw up, but he put it in the right spot. But I do feel like all of the time in football, the quarterbacks get more credit than the wide receivers because Higgins made an outstanding play on that ball. Not only that, he comes down right at the sideline, turns it upfield, and just runs by everybody for a 64-yard touchdown. It was a brilliant play by him. Now, granted, Lawrence had to get him that ball, and he threw it on a rope. He really did. The thing that I say about this kid, the reason that you have to play him, is the damn potential, Taylor, period. The guy's got a better arm than Kelly Bryant. I think the guy is probably has a higher football IQ than Kelly Bryant. That's not knocking Kelly Bryant in any way. I just think he can do more things than Bryant can.
Then let him play.
I understand
what
you're
Kelly
saying.
Don't put Kelly Bryant back
in. They put Kelly Bryant back in, I assume, because they wanted to go to more of a ground presence, because that's what it seemed like to me. They wanted to grind it out once they got the lead, and they wanted to grind it out and get out of there. And that seems to be like the mentality last year. They were up 21-0 on Wake Forest. Wake had a solid damn football team last year. I mean, Wake beat this – I'm pretty sure they beat this A&M team in the bowl, did they not? I think that's right. Wake was a damn good football team last year. Good quarterback with Wolford. He ended up going down, I think, against Clemson. I might be wrong. But 21-0, and then Clemson got conservative, and next thing you know, Wake kind of gets back in the ball game. So this frustrates friends of mine that are Clemson fans, and I'm sure it frustrates anybody that's listening to this that is a Tiger fan, that you don't want to play conservative when you think – when you know that you're the better team, and you were the better team on Saturday, period. You ended up winning the ball game, so you're the better team. And I know that there's some naysayers out there that are going to – they're going to look at that game and they're going to talk about this fumble, and there's probably a lot of Gamecock fans out there that are going to be wrong to do so, that are going to sit there and talk crap about this fumble all year about how you shouldn't have beat A&M, and that's bullshit. That's just bottom line. That's garbage. That is not what happened in this football game. Yes, that was a thing that happened. That's not the reason that the Tigers won this football game. The Tigers won this football game because they got a 28-13 lead and held on to it because they have an outstanding defense that makes plays when they need to make plays. Now, we've seen that now going back 4 years. This team has been so good on defense that even when you play piss poor on offense for spurts, especially as they did in the fourth quarter, where I think they were outgained – my God, it was something like 200-40 or something like that in the fourth quarter. It might have been more than that. It was insane. And they're still, yet they still win the ball game, okay, on the road. So what I take away from this game, in all honesty, is I see your point that you don't like quarterback controversies. Most fans don't. I'm not saying I like them. And truth be told, I said it on the previous podcast when we kicked off the season and we're previewing the year. Bryant had to start the game at A&M, but you're going to see Trevor Lawrence. You saw Trevor Lawrence. I don't think that he necessarily did anything to where I feel like, you know, people are down on him or anything like that. It's just Bryant's your guy is what I see. And I think definitely this week coming up, we'll get into that in a little bit, that you're going to see this guy a lot against Georgia Southern, like you did against Furman. And he understands right now this is Kelly Bryant's team. Kelly Bryant has earned that spot. He's the leader. They went to the playoff under this guy. You know, they didn't beat Bama. They struggled on offense in that game. A lot of people struggle against Alabama. That's just a fact of life. But a ton of people struggle against Clemson, too. And A&M struggled against Clemson for three quarters the other day and then had a magical fourth quarter and nearly came back and pulled off a huge upset at home, but they didn't. That being said, I think it has to be said right now that – we know that Clemson is a premium football team. Nobody is going to deny that, would you?
Mm-hmm.
What I take away from this game, though, and this is not just to really kiss their ass or anything, this coaching staff at A&M is such an improvement on what Kevin Sumlin had there. If this is a Kevin Sumlin-coached A&M football team this past Saturday, I think Clemson wins by three touchdowns or more. I don't think there's a doubt in my mind. That's why I predicted Clemson to win the way – I think I called 34-17. You were somewhere. You said it'd be a 17-point ball game. We both agreed they'd win by more than two touchdowns. They did have a two-touchdown lead late. They could have done that. It's possible. So there was a chance for that to happen. But if this was a Kevin Sumlin-coached ball club, I think there's no doubt in my mind they go out there and they lay an egg. And the reason why is I just don't think he's a very good game day coach. I think he has a pretty good scheme. He knows how to recruit good athletes. Obviously, they had a wealth of talent. Jimbo came in there, had another nice recruiting class. But I'll tell you one damn thing right now. One thing I see is Jimbo's a smart-ass coach. He won big at FSU. He's getting the big bucks here at A&M. He's put together a staff, and he's got talent here. man, don't sleep on these guys. The next few years, this might be the team that can step up consistently and battle the tide in that SEC West. Getting off on that, because this is a Clemson podcast and not an SEC West podcast, I think the Dabo continues to him and his staff continue to just make the right calls at the right time, it seems like. Yes, they make mistakes. Yes, sometimes teams like NC State last year, they're in a game with you where you, and you had the hiccup against Syracuse, but that's last season. You know, put that behind you. Right now, you're number two in the land. You know, everybody and their mother and brother and whoever else is picking you to make the playoff, including me. I don't think that going forward, there's that many tests on this. Georgia Tech looked like garbage on defense against South Florida the other day. Just bottom line, gave up 49 points and then lost 49-38, something like that. Couldn't stop anything South Florida did the entire day. They scored a bunch of points, but guess what? They're not going to come out and run that dive on Clemson all day and expect to get a bunch done. Just not going to happen. Not going to be able to throw the ball. Clemson's going to – that's getting way ahead of ourselves. FSU doesn't look that good. Struggle with Samford, an FCS opponent, and somebody they should really just go out and beat the shit out of, and they didn't. And I hate to use all this foul language on here. We're trying to keep these podcasts a little cleaner than normal, but you know what? It is what it is. And I don't think the Gamecocks pose a threat to the Tigers either. That's just bottom line reality. So you got maybe NC State, maybe somebody like that, or a Boston College can hang with them for a little bit like they did last year, but they pulled away late and beat Boston College big. You know, they ended up beating NC State. So I think both of those teams might have been better last year than they are this year. I think Clemson is as good, if not better, than they were last year as far as what I've seen so far. And the defensive line continues to impress. Kellen Mond just made a ton of plays the other night where they got their hands on him. Wilkins and Austin Bryant, they got to him, and they hit him several times. And A&M didn't end up with many rushing yards at all. I think he ended up being their leading rusher, which is crazy because early on they busted a few runs here and there for like 7 yards, 8 yards. I thought they were going to get something going. It just didn't happen. So run down the you want me to do the box score, or you want to do the stats first?
You can go.
All right, I'm going to do the box score real quick, a little scoring summary. At 4:28 left in the first quarter, A&M got on the board with a – damn it, page just refreshed, sorry. Here we go. Daniel LaCamara hit a 40-yard field goal, go up 3-0. With a minute 23 left in the first, Kelly Bryant punches it in from 1 yard out. Craig Hugel makes the kick, makes it 7-3. In the second quarter, we had the big pass from Trevor Lawrence to T. Higgins for 64 yards, just a – big time play, and I know Taylor will argue. I think you're arguing the same point I'm arguing, that it kind of sucks sometimes when a receiver makes a big play like that the quarterback gets all the pup. And I'm taking nothing away from Trevor Lawrence, guys. I really am not. I'm just thinking, I watch football a lot, and I watch these announcers just really, you know, Tom Brady will throw a slant over the middle, the guy gets 30 yards, and oh, what a pass from Brady. You know, you know, it was a nice pass, so I'm not taking anything away from him. Higgins with a big play, though. We knew that he was going to be a factor this season. He showed up today. And A&M cuts it to 14-6 early third quarter. So we had a 14-3 game at the half. 10:37 left in the third. LaCamara hits another 40-yarder. 4:59 left in the third. 8-yard pass from Kelly Bryant to DeAndre Overton, and that makes it 21-6. Excuse me. Kendrick Rogers then completes a 9-yard catches a 9-yard pass from Kellen Mond. LaCamara hits the kick. It's 21-13. And then very quickly goes right down the field, does Clemson Tigers, an ETN, a 1-yard run. Greg Hugel kick, 28-13. This is sort of when I thought, okay, the Tigers are going to pull away with it. Well, on the next possession, Courtney Davis takes a 14-yard pass from Kellen Mond, where Mond is just slinging it all over the yard. I mean, he's hitting big play after big play. Refusing to go down, rolling out to his left, throwing just across his body, hitting passes that he shouldn't hit. Like I said earlier, defying logic, really, and physics, and just making big-time plays. And then we just go scoreless until the end, because A&M has the big drive, goes down there, fumbles out of the back of the end zone for a touchback, and, you know, the referees conference for a while. We look at it several times. No indisputable evidence. The pylon cam can't catch the ball. Is what it is. It's the ruling on the field stands. So A&M gets stops Clemson, gets the ball back, and with 46 seconds left in the game, Kellen Mond throws a 24-yard pass to Kendrick Rogers. Just a crazy play. And I know the Clemson fans were – I watched them in the stands. I know the ones that went out there, I'm sure the ones at home were just as nervous. I mean, this was a nerve-wracking football game. It had to be, because it looked at the end of the at the end of the third that you had just taken control of the football game. Have to feel good up 15 points, right? I mean, I've always thought when you're at a game or watching a game, when your team gets up two touchdowns, you can kind of be pretty comfortable, you know, because one score can't tie it or beat you. You know, that's I'm a little more pessimistic, so I like a 17-point lead. So I know that, like, back-to-back bad plays can't beat you. But the Tigers hang on, deny the two-point conversion, run the clock out, and they go home winners. Huge win for the Tigers. Go ahead and throw us some stats, and as we go, just tell us what you thought, if you want to add anything, and I'm going to throw in some little quibs here and there.
Kelly Bryant,
whips, I should say.
12 for 17, 205 yards, one touchdown. Trevor Lawrence, 5 for 9, 93 yards, one touchdown. Receiving.
Didn't throw a lot of passes, so you see what they were trying to do. The game plan was to run the ball, I mean, and control the clock.
Higgins had three receptions for
very old school
123
style.
Yards and one touchdown. Amari Rodgers had five catches for 73 yards. DeAndre Overton had two catches for 20 yards and one touchdown. ETN, three catches, 23 yards. Renfro, four catches, 59 yards.
Yes.
Rushing. Kelly Bryant, the leading rusher, 15 carries, 54 yards and a touchdown. ETN, eight carries, 44 yards and a touchdown. They ran for a total of 115 yards and passed for 298 yards. So pretty balanced
attack. Very balanced. Very balanced attack.
I mean.
Absolutely. Absolutely what they wanted to do.
Yeah.
Can I read you something that I just stumbled upon? This was written earlier today. This is how Clemson's two QBs complement each other. Alex Kirshner wrote this for SBNation.com. And
fake news.
Okay, well, you can say that all you want, but I think this makes a lot of sense. His tagline here under there, how Clemson's two QBs complement each other. Clemson senior is so steady, it's a skill, and the freshman is already good at the main thing the senior lacks. So when you talk about a quarterback controversy, I don't think there's a quarterback controversy here.
I didn't say it was a controversy.
I know you didn't. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. I'm just trying to say here that I think that this – and I mentioned this to Callie the other day talking about it. I think this is a thing that could go forward for a long time, that it's not really going to be a controversy at Clemson, that they can actually – they might be one of the few teams that can pull this off. This has been done in the past. The Gamecocks did it back in the day. With Mike Hold and Mitchell back in whatever in the mid 80s, they did it, and I'm saying it's been done before where you got a guy that's better than the guy, you'd go with the hot hand sometimes, but I think Kelly is the guy that you could almost start Lawrence and let him go out there and pass the ball. But if you bring in Kelly Bryant, the other team's not thinking run, right? They're not just – it's not like a Hurts and Tua situation at Bama where Jalen Hurts really cannot throw the football. He can't. He can't drop back 25 times a game and throw the – he can't against a team like maybe Georgia Southern or Coastal Carolina or something like that. He can't go out there and do that against an elite football team. Kelly Bryant has proven that he can go throw the ball against an elite football team. Maybe not as well as you want. He didn't have a good performance last year against Alabama. No, he didn't. But that's freaking Alabama, man. I mean, most guys don't. But I think that they can complement one another. And I wasn't going to read the article by this guy, but I just thought that was interesting because I was just skimming through it. And he's saying, you know, like Bryant is got him to the playoff last year despite not putting up big passing stats. Then you have a five-star recruit here that has no experience but comes in and just shows a big arm. And he's saying that Bryant brings things to the table that – the all-world freshman doesn't for right now. So they're saying he's an average passer. He was 60th nationally in rating and 70th in yards per throw, right in the middle of the ACC in those stats last season. But they're saying, you know, this was the best passing game of his career. 12 of 17 for 205 yards and a touchdown. He tacked on 14 non-sack runs for 62 yards. There you go. It's a 191 quarterback rating or whatever they're saying. That's ridiculous. And here they're saying that two things that he brings to the table are two things that are critical to the quarterback position is using his legs to run and create the threat of the run, freeing up Clemson's other weapons, and he's smart with the ball, which last year he did have 8 picks, but I expect him to cut down on that. And then he was the leading rusher here, and with the sacks filtered out for the game, and he only throws a pick every 50 passes last season. The national average was a pick every 36 passes. So he's definitely an above-average passer. Let's not get that twisted. The guy can throw the football, and he's a leader. And I think the team follows him. And they don't. I don't think the team would want to see Trevor Lawrence take over as just, okay, here's the spot, kid. Because you can't do that to a Bryant who's worked and sat behind Deshaun Watson. So I understand what they're doing. I get what you're saying, that you think it might disrupt the rhythm of the offense. Didn't seem to be the case the other day, I don't really think, because I think they actually just wanted to change the way they were doing things offensively in this football game. That's my take anyway. I mean, I think they were just going to more of a pound the rock type of style. So you can go ahead with the other stats. I want to throw that in there because it is important, because I know Clemson fans are thinking about it every week. There, you know, that's going to be a question on their mind. If you do drop a game, and like you said, let's just throw this out there as a hypothetical. If you did drop this game, and you think the fans, and I kind of do too, would probably be like, okay, why didn't Lawrence get back in the game? Is that what you're saying? Is that kind of where your head's at?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I get it. So, that being said, I think we can go ahead with the stats. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Kellen Mond, 23 for 40.
40.
430 yards.
And, oh, my God.
3 touchdowns.
Yeah.
Also.
I said, hey, I called that he was going to – He wasn't that good, man. I can't say that anymore. I think that a lot of that might have to do with Jimbo and his scheme.
He was the leading rusher for 10 carries for 33 yards.
He ran around a lot, but he had guys chasing him all day.
He would something I noticed, Clemson bit hard on him when he would run, and then it would open up a receiver.
The middle of the field was open.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
One where he acted like he was going to run.
But see, that's the thing. Is like the middle of the field is not open if Clemson's facing a pocket passer here.
Yeah.
There's no way because they're going to collapse the edges and whatnot, and they're going to get pressure up the middle as well because they have two studs at D tackle. They're bringing blitzes. Venables gets crazy with it sometimes. But for the most part, this guy, what I'm going to say, and I'm really going to – put some shine on this kid right now, and I think all Clemson fans know they were lucky to escape Kyle Field with a victory. That has to be said. You know that. But at the same time, you played a hell of a football game, and a kid played way above his level that he's shown in the past. And I do that goes back to me to coaching, and not just to coaching, but the fact that when it looked like the play was over, this kid, he looked like Manziel out there. Yeah. He really did. He was running around doing stuff you just don't see normal quarterbacks do, man. I mean, he looked impressive. He really did.
So, Trevion Williams had 17 carries for 31 yards. And they had a couple other guys carry the ball.
That Clemson bottled him up after the first quarter. They really did.
Receiving, Kendrick Rogers, 7 receptions, 120 yards, 2 touchdowns. Cameron Buckley, 4 receptions, 93 yards. They had a couple other guys get 2 or 3 receptions for 61, 48. I mean, this everybody caught the ball.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Courtney Davis had 2 receptions for 39 yards and hauled in a touchdown catch.
Yeah.
Defensive-wise, what did – I know I saw Cleveland Farrell,
yeah.
He was in the backfield.
Bo.
Every play.
Listen, the reason I said that Kellen Mond looked like he was in the Matrix, these guys were firing bullets at him all after. I mean, man, if it wasn't Farrell, Wilkins, Bryant, Lawrence. I mean, Dexter Lawrence is a damn man beast in the middle. This defensive line is scary. A lot of people, I've heard some dumbasses saying, oh, Clemson gave up a ton of yards. And the, you know, this is supposed to be one of the best defenses in the world. And no, man, let me tell you something. That quarterback, that's who made all this happen. Don't you agree? Look at the stats you just read. Bottom line, he made it happen.
Yeah.
And that's why Clemson was tired. It looked like they were gassed on the up front in the game the other day. You know why? This guy's making life hard for them because they're getting back there. And guess what? Herbie said it a couple times, and the phrase rings true. It's like a race to the quarterback when you play Clemson. You're not going to line up and pound the rock at this football team. If you do, my God, it would take a pro offensive line for you to be able to do that. Bottom line, it would take a pretty damn good pro offensive line, one of the best in the NFL, for you to be able to line up and run for 210 on this team, I think, or even 150. Hell, I don't know the last time they've given up 150 rushing yards, let alone 200. So that's not really a threat here. But this guy stretching the play, rolling out to his left, throwing across his body. He did all kinds of stuff. He threw balls the other day that I thought, my God, he's just throwing it up. But there would be somebody there, and they would make a play. They would make a big catch and either fall down with it or turn it upfield, get a little bit of extra yards. Impressive performance by Kellen Mond, because he had four of the best in the business chasing him all day. They got to him several times. I mean, but they did all they could do. And it was just, he was almost too much for Clemson, and their defense really, really, they being A&M, the Aggies D really stepped up late in the game in the fourth quarter and just would not allow Clemson to run the football and run time off the clock, forced them into a couple of three and outs. And that really, really changed the complexion of this football game. But huge win for Dabo and company. And what did you think about the game when you went back and watched it? Because I know you didn't watch it live.
No, I did. The only part I caught live was the controversial touchdown, non-touchdown, or the fumble. The fumble.
He wasn't going to score.
And the touchdown after that they got.
It is controversial because they were even arguing against it, which again goes back to my hatred of announcers.
The touchdown after that is what I was told. Oh, okay. They got that.
Stopped Clemson and then scored.
Then they scored.
So, the very end of the game is what you saw.
So I caught that, and then I watched some recaps earlier today. And like you said, it looked like that guy was just throwing the football.
Just in the matrix, man. He really did.
People were catching it.
He was in it. So there's a play I want to point out, and I don't know at what point in the game it is, but I can see it in my head right now while I'm talking to you guys, that he's in the pocket. And I think it was Wilkins grabbed him on his left shoulder.
No.
Was it Lawrence?
It was Farrell, wasn't it?
Oh, okay. Well,
he got away?
Which one of the four? No. He just keeps his eyes. Like, they zoomed in and just show his eyes. Just stay downfield. He gets pulled by this giant man on his shoulder, but barely moves. So that just shows the strength that he has in his body to be able to shake this. I mean, he didn't get a great grasp on him, but the fact that this guy grabs me like that, I'm going down. And I'm not a small guy, but this guy just keeps his focus downfield and then just delivers a laser over the middle, and I think it ended up being like a 20-something 30-yard pass. It was just impressive performance from him, but they come up short. They played a hell of a lot better than I thought they did. I'm sure the Tiger fans are absolutely ecstatic that you survived that scare. Pretty sure they're healthy coming out of it as well. So, got an opponent coming in this week with Georgia Southern that you're heavily favored against. And I think you can be nothing but happy if you're a Tiger fan right now, honestly, because, you know, you're right there at number two. You take care of business. You're not going to move anywhere in the polls, regardless of what the ACC does. And I think some people do have worries about that. I think that's sort of unfair. If you go out and take care of your business and everybody knows how talented you are, you've made the playoff every year that it's existed, I don't think the playoff committee is going to slight Clemson just because their conference might be down. I just really don't. Because I think there's a couple of games coming up, especially in conference, where Clemson is just going to absolutely dominate. I feel like they're going to show you know, that game, that maybe A&M is just a lot better than people think, and that remains to be seen, but I believe that to be the case. My takeaway from this game, Clemson is a really damn good football team. Once again, there's no doubt about it, a great football team, bottom line. And A&M has made improvements. That's what I'll say. I think A&M might be better than I gave them a little bit of credit for. I did say going into this game they had a lot of talent. I had question marks about how Jimbo and staff would incorporate their system into – into coaching these guys, but when you have this kind of talent at wide receiver, this kind of speed, this front that they have, their D-line is solid, man, and they have some good defenders. I think good things are on the way for the Aggies. Clemson's already at the top of the college football world, or right there at it, you know, going to be knocking on the door again this year. In my opinion, a playoff team, I'll repeat myself again. That pretty much everything I need to say about that game. Anything you want to add?
Nope.
All right, so we'll move into previewing this week. I'm pretty sure the way this hurricane looks, I think Clemson's going to be okay. There might not be a game in Columbia. Not too sure. Don't really know. I know you guys don't give a damn whether there's a game in Columbia or not, but you have friends and family that are Gamecock fans and people that live around this area that are Clemson fans, and you don't want anything bad to happen to them. My mind is totally on this hurricane right now and not on football, but I wanted to bring a little bit of content here to my Gamecock Nation and to Tiger fans as well this week and put my podcasts out and give you something to listen to, maybe entertain you in this kind of turbulent time. Man, it sucks this time of year here in South Carolina because this threat is pretty much here on us every year for about two and a half months. And we all remember Hugo and how devastating that was. Don't want anything like that to happen. Don't want people to lose their lives and their homes and valuables and whatnot. And that's just bad stuff. So let's move back into football. I'll get off that negative little tangent there. Clemson opens as a 34-point favorite early line against Georgia Southern. I could actually look up no, the real line might not be out yet. It might be till tomorrow, but we'll go with that for right now. 34-point favorite against Georgia Southern. I feel like that's probably about right. I could see that this game going by kind of quickly. I think this team is better than Furman. I'll give them that. I don't know. I think they're probably a good bit better than Furman, actually, even though they were 2-10 last season. They had the number one recruiting class in the Sun Belt, typically have a ton of talent. This is a team that a few years ago, 2-3 years ago, I made a lot of money on gambling. They were just a stud running team in their conference, that is. You know, they play the big boys. They tend to get beat. And I expect a big ass-cutting this weekend for them up in Death Valley. They run a shotgun pistol-style triple option. And before, they were coming from running the flex bone, and I thought that when they moved up to this level, they ran the flex bone the first year. They were really successful at it. They got away from that a little bit because I think that they saw what other teams were doing. And really, when you flip this into that shotgun pistol-style formation, we've seen Air Force do this in the last few years. You can really get you can really create some more space, I think, and be a little bit more dynamic on offense when you do this. And it probably makes it a little bit easier to throw the football. They don't throw the ball a ton. They're 2-0 on the year. Their first game, they beat South Carolina State 37-6. That's a big win for them. That's a team they used to play quite regularly back in the FCS. And then last week they beat UMass 34-13, and UMass has been a pretty bad football team for a while. But Georgia Southern looking to rebound. They've already got as many wins as they did last year, and they face some tough competition at their level in the Sun Belt. I mean, you got App State and teams like that, Arkansas State, that always have pretty good talent. And they're looking to get back into being competitive. Their quarterback, Shy Wirtz, is a kid from Clinton, South Carolina, which you Tiger fans will know exactly where that is. And on the season, let's talk about the first game. He was 5-7 against South Carolina State for 29 yards passing. They do not throw the ball a ton. He had 22 carries for a 163 and 3 touchdowns in that game. So, of course, you're going to see a heavy diet of quarterback runs. They do run a triple option. They employ a fullback sometimes, 2 backs, 3 backs in the – You know, run some motion, try to run some misdirection on you. They got 8 starters back on offense. So, you know, sometimes when you have a really bad football team, like last week I picked App State against the Charlotte 49ers. The 49ers had a ton of talent back on both sides of the ball. Off of a bad team, that doesn't seem to have improved this year. App State really worked them. Can't remember the final score. I think they beat them by 30-something. They got 9 starters back on the D. But we'll stay on offense. Last week, 6 of 9 passing against UMass for a 154, 2 touchdowns. He had 14 carries for 83 yards and a touchdown. Wesley Fields was the leading rusher last week, though. He had 141 yards, no touchdowns against UMass. He's got 173 on the year. So They're going to be those are going to be your primary ball carriers, but they're going to get some other guys involved. So far this year, that seems to be the two guys that have touched the ball the most in the run game. The only other information I really have on them that I've dug into, I'm not going to go into defensive stats and whatnot. They have switched from a 4-3 base defense to a 3-4, more of an attacking style. They like to blitz a little bit. They're trying to look to get the 3-4 enables you to be a little bit more multiple, I think, because it's a defense where you might have some more athletic guys at linebackers can cover some of these spread teams that like to run the ball. So this might bode well, I think, for them to try and stop the Clemson ground game. I just don't think that's going to happen. And 34-point line here, let me get your thoughts. I know you don't know a damn thing about Georgia Southern, really, but you've seen Clemson play. You've seen what they've got. Would you be willing with what I just told you about Georgia Southern to lay the 34 points with Clemson?
That probably would be, not 34 points.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think they beat him by that much.
I could see Georgia Southern not scoring in this game. Just like I said against Furman. Furman ended up scoring 7, but I could see Georgia Southern not scoring. This type of offense doesn't work against Clemson. I just don't see it.
I mean, I don't think they score. But
they can't throw the ball, so I don't feel like that.
I think it's going to be like 27-0.
Huh? Okay, well, negative Nancy over here, 27. No, it's not. I mean, that's still a shutout, but I will make a prediction on this game. I did not predict the South Carolina-Marshall game, the reason being I was wrong about what the spread was to start with because South Carolina's only a 13.5-point favorite from what you looked up after we recorded our little podcast over there. But that being said, I don't know if they're going to play the game, so that's why I didn't give a prediction. I do think Clemson will play up in Death Valley. I hope that the devastation here in South Carolina is not too bad that people can't go up and enjoy a ball game, take the family up, whatnot, have a beer or two, and enjoy football. But I think I'm going to say, I think Lawrence gets in the game. I think he slings it around a little bit. I think he can throw 2 or 3 touchdowns. I think Bryant can add 2 or 3 touchdowns. I'm going to say, just because I think Georgia Southern might get a – they might get a lucky play here or there, but I'm going to say about 48-3. So I think they cover the spread. I really do. I think 48-3, 52-7 maybe, something like that. I think it's a big win. I do think Clemson could cover the 34. I don't know that I would lay 34 points. I mean, but I feel confident they could cover that. So not something I would necessarily wager on, but I would think they can cover that. That's pretty much all I have to say about that. And I will say this. I think who we got? Let me look. Because I forgot who Clemson plays next after they play this game, so I can kind of maybe run through that a little bit for 1 second because we haven't given you a whole ton of content here, but it's all well and good. They're at Georgia Tech next week. So a bigger ball game against a team that's going to run the option as well. Georgia Tech did not look good against South Florida, as I said. I think that Clemson has had hiccups here and there in Atlanta over the years, but I think with this talent on this defensive line, man. I mean, this is 4 NFL players, possible 4 first rounders on this D line. There's no doubt in my mind. At least 3 of them are going to go in the first round. And I think all of them are going to be players, not just, you know, guys that get drafted. They're going to be players in the NFL. They're just that good. And that can't be said enough. It's really tough to run a triple option offense against a team this disciplined and this good at tackling. Kendall Joseph has played well at linebacker as well. He's another guy that I think maybe not getting as much pub as he needs to get because he's a big-time player as well. And I think the secondary will end up coming together. They had some hiccups the other night. And you can talk about that was just the quarterback running around to me, just making extra time. I don't think it's any kind of indictment on Clemson's defense at all. I don't think anybody needs to worry about that. So I think Georgia Southern's a big win. I think the big thing is get out of there healthy. Let some young guys play. If you get up big, you know, let the younger guys get in. Maybe not even play Lawrence. Put the other quarterback in. Put the third team guy in. Let him go play some. And especially if you get up, you know, 3-4 touchdowns, just I wouldn't say lay down. Go run your stuff, but run it with other guys. You agree with that? Like run your stuff with other guys and don't – don't just go to a conservative attack.
Yeah.
That's what I would want to see.
But I feel like they're going to be conservative.
The whole game? I completely disagree with that. I think they're gonna come out and they're going to get up big and then might get conservative.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't see 27 nothing, but I see why you're saying that. And I think against Georgia Tech, you're going to have another big win. And then it's on after that, you got revenge against Syracuse in my mind. And then we get into the meat of the schedule. So, I think now, don't look ahead if you're a Clemson fan. You know, if you're a Clemson player, the key this week, just don't look ahead to Georgia Tech. Stay focused. You're going to beat the hell out of Georgia Southern. And then I think you're going to beat the hell out of Georgia Tech as well. I would think Clemson, by the time that game rolls around, they're going to be at least a two-touchdown favorite. That's just my prediction right now, looking way ahead. So, that being said, I don't have much to say other than the Tigers still look, you know, just like a defensive factory out there. They did give up a bunch of passing yards that ended up not mattering whatsoever because the only stats that matter is the final score. That's the bottom line. Guys, check out our other podcast that we have called Inside the Lines. We usually bring it to you on Wednesday. We have for the past couple of weeks. Might not do it on Wednesday this week. We're going to see if we might can get it out maybe a day earlier, which I wouldn't really want to do, but we might have to do it because of weather and whatnot, work schedules. Taylor might have to stay at the old hospital. They got a bunch of people coming in. They're evacuating from the coast. We hope that, you know, the hurricane can skip us, and I hate to wish it all the bad stuff on the North Carolinians and the people up in Virginia and whatnot. But, you know, sometimes you have to be selfish. I don't want it to hurt anybody or kill anybody, but, you know, it probably will. It's a big storm. I'm worried about it a little bit. But check our other podcast, Inside the Lines, if you get a chance. It's a gambling podcast. We go over some big games every week. Last week we only did one college game. We previewed the entire NFL schedule. This week we'll probably do two or three college games and probably two or three NFL, probably six games or so, maybe a couple more, who knows. And then at the end of that, we'll analyze the lines there, give you our thoughts about what happened last week, go over Taylor and I have been picking against one another. We'll go over all that. And then at the end, I give you my picks of what I would gamble on. Not doing great right now, but not doing that bad. Had a little comeback this week, so we'll get all that straightened out and hopefully moving forward. I'm actually on my picks. I'm doing really well. But I'm just not doing as well. I'm only giving like one or two a week on the podcast, so kind of splitting those is the way that's been going. But on all my picks, and maybe I'll give a few more picks so it'll seem a little bit better. But check that podcast out if you have any inkling on gambling or anything like that. I know several of you guys play the sheet that I play, the old Lucky 13 and whatnot. That's a fun thing to do, and just check out what we have to say about it. And I like to dive into those as well as this. I'm having fun doing this. Appreciate any feedback you give us. This has been Talking Tigers, your host Wesley Burris and Taylor Griggs, a Winner Die Sports production. Join us back next week.